This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Ken Arthur is the pastor of the Phoenix Community Church in Kalamazoo. The phoenix, as he reminds us in his book, is a mythological bird that rises up out of its own ashes to new life. Ken Arthur's book is called Out of the Ashes, Constructive Theology for Those Burned Out on Christianity. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So in case people don't quite connect the metaphor there, explain the title of your book.
Well, Out of the Ashes is, like you say, the phoenix is the imagery. It's, I guess, easy to explain in the terms of the church because the church was created, Phoenix Church, was created for people who were burned out and being rejected by other churches, other Christian churches, mainly because of their sexuality. And so the idea is raising from the ashes, making something new out of nothing.
Who do you think is burned out? You mentioned people who are gay. Who else might be burned out at this point on Christianity?
I think a lot of people. A lot of people, we hear more and more about Christianity being a dying religion, people leaving the church in droves. And I think a lot of people do that because they see hypocrisy of the church. They see teachings that they don't understand and don't seem to have relevance to their life. For example, I've known people who have undergone a tragedy, and instead of finding the religion as a help to them, they find their religion as a hindrance because they don't understand. They have this image of God as an all-powerful figure and don't understand how that God could have let the tragedy happen. And so they lose their faith. They don't it doesn't make sense to them anymore. And so they have to rebuild that.
Something that the rabbi Harold Kushner has written about, when bad things happen to good people.
Right, yeah.
And some people do have trouble understanding, if this could happen, how is there an all-powerful, omnipotent God?
Yep. And for a lot of people, they have to rebuild their faith from scratch because they just what they've been taught doesn't make sense to them anymore under those circumstances. And for me, in my journey, it was being taught that God is a loving God and that God is also a judgmental God who's going to, send non-believers to hell. And I just couldn't make sense of those two things together. And so I had to, I left the church for a while and then I came back to the church and really had to make sense of how to deal with that. I found a church where I could ask questions and not have to necessarily have all the answers as I explored those questions.
And one of the things that affected your trajectory, if we can call it that, when it comes to religion, is coming out as gay, correct?
Yeah, that's actually what brought me back to the church, is in the process of coming out and trying to meet other gay and lesbian people, I became aware of a church in Kalamazoo, which was welcoming and supportive of gay people. And so I went there. I went there to meet gay people, and what I found was open, inclusive theology that really I found meaningful to my life.
You actually, in this book, use the term queer, which to some people might be a little jarring. Why do you use that term?
For me, it's kind of a catch-all term, and it's kind of a term that's been reclaimed by many people. It does still bother a lot of people, and so you got to take the context that you use it in. But especially for younger folks, I think, and for academia, they've really reclaimed that term, queer. And it really just means to be transgressive of boundaries. So you can talk about it as a verb, queering things. If you queer marriage, for example, you're challenging the boundaries that marriage is for only heterosexuals. But it's also kind of catch-all. Instead of saying LGBTQ, you can just, queers, folks who don't fit the boundaries that society has created.
When your book actually arrived in the mail, it was the time when Hurricane Irma, Hurricane Harvey were hitting various parts of the United States and U.S. territories. And as often seems to happen now, once we have some big, large-scale disaster like this, there is some religious figure who made the claim that this is a punishment for acceptance of gay people or for transgender people being allowed to use whatever bathrooms they want. Now, these things are pretty easy to dismiss and pretty easy to mock, and some people did so in a pretty humorous way. But I also wonder if you think that these are some of the things that people hear. And if they're gay or lesbian, transgender, etc., that they say, maybe Christianity's not for me.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of things that tend to drive people away from the church because it's just so outrageously silly. And it's hard to take the church seriously if that's what the church is preaching. And that's part of my book is because that's the image we get in the media, a lot of the media. Part of the idea of the book is to just let people know that that's not really what Christianity is about. There is other faces of Christianity out there. So you don't need to reject Christianity because you feel harmed by the fundamentalist conservative Christian beliefs.
I want to bring up a couple of terms that you use in this book and have you explain what they mean. One of them is you describe God as some people see Santa Claus for adults. What do you mean by Santa Claus for adults?
As an example of an image of God that no longer made sense to me, is a Santa Claus for adults that you be good and God will reward you. And if you be bad, God will punish you. I mean, that's kind of what we teach about Santa Claus. You know, Santa Claus is always watching us and making a list of who's naughty and who's nice. And that's kind of, I mean, the image is, the similarities between that and really conservative image of God are quite clear, I think, and it just didn't make sense to me anymore, and so that's part of what I came in my path to reject.
You also say that some people see God as everyone must be like me.
Yeah, another concept of God, which I found harmful, that kind of making God in our own image, and that everyone has to fit that image. I think the example that jumps to my mind is that God is certainly, you know, a heterosexual male. So
usually with a white beard.
Right. and so we preference people that are male and white and heterosexual because that's kind of what our image of God is.
One of the things you point out in the book is that in movies, you know, if you go back to the 70s, George Burns played God in three different movies. But as we move forward, that hasn't always been the case. Morgan Freeman played God. Alanis Morissette played God.
Right.
Is that helpful, even on the fringes here, that we've got, you know, this image now of God is presented to us as something other than a white male?
I think it is helpful to disrupt those images and to put in other images of what God is. In that way, I mean, disrupting those images that white males are preferred because God is white male, I think helps to be more accepting of other people. But I think also just the idea that God is a person also needs to be disrupted. And so I talk about, I mean, not only are those images of God as something other than white male good, but images of God as something other than a person are good too, because they challenge us to think. And challenge us to look at God in new ways.
How do you believe that a Christian should read and interpret the Bible? What's the best way to read that and sort of incorporate it into their own lives?
I think the kind of the stock phrase is you take the Bible seriously, but not literally. The Bible for me is a record of my faith ancestors' journey. And so it's what those people who wrote the Bible understood and what they experienced and what they felt about God. And that can be very helpful for my journey. But if I take it too literally, I mean, it can also be very harmful because where those people that wrote the Bible were at 2,000 or more years ago is very different from where we're at today in our society. And so I think the Bible is good as kind of a foundation for our faith, give us something common to talk about, gives us a common set of stories that we can talk about and explore as we discuss what our spirituality means to us. But it's not the only thing.
Do you think that young people are perhaps less like, there's some polling which has shown that young people are less likely to be part of an organized religion. They're more likely to be agnostic or even atheist. And do you think that they are a reachable audience, depending on, you know, what the message is and what sort of, religion is presented to them?
Yeah, because I think as human beings, we all hunger for some spirituality. We all have spiritual aspects to our lives. For me, spirituality is largely about relationship, our relationship with each other and our relationship with nature, with creation, and our relationship with something more mystical that, you know, I call God. Somebody else might call it something different. And I think religion is one way to explore that spirituality in our lives. And so people may be put off of or burned out on Christianity, but I think there still is a hunger for exploring the spiritual aspect of their lives. And so I try to present ways and address some of the issues that people might be burned out and put off by in my book, and then hopefully giving them some alternatives to think about and explore so that Christianity may be one path that they follow. There may be other paths that they follow as well.
Going back to taking the Bible seriously but not literally, there's, I suppose we've got to address the question of how do you interpret science? You know, is science pitted against the Bible sometimes, perhaps by religious leaders to try to say that, well, you can't believe in this scientific theory if you're going to also believe in the Christian religion because the Bible says X.
Yeah, and again, it's not to take the Bible literally. I mean, the Bible says the sun stood still, but we know from science that we're all going to fly off into space if that actually happened. And so, yeah, I don't see any conflict between my beliefs and my faith and science. I think if science present something that challenges what I believe, then I have to look at that and take that into account and realize that, well, maybe my belief isn't quite right. I mean, that's part of a continual spiritual journey. We're always growing and learning new things and understanding in new ways, and science is part of that.
When you write about sin, you say that used to bolster the power and influence of the institutional church, the concept of sin may be one of the most abused Christian doctrines. Explain what that means.
Well, I think, I mean, kind of the cynical view of sin is the church teaches us that we're all bad people, original sin. You know, we were all created, or as a result of the fall, we've become bad people by birth, and that's just inherent in us. And I think that has sometimes in the church's history been used in large part to control people. You know, you're bad, you're sinful. The only way to fix that is to come to us in the church. And, you know, we'll make it right. We'll get you good with God. and I think that's especially harmful and problematic for gay and lesbian people who are sometimes told by the church that they're inherently bad. And so they connect that with the doctrines of sin and just, you know, end up rejecting that doctrine at all. I think there are good things about talking about sin. For example, it reminds us that we're not perfect. But there's certainly been a lot of harm done with the ideas and talk that we do around sin as well. And I've actually come to different understandings of sin than, you know, as a kid I was taught that sin was just being bad. But for me now, sin has come more to mean separation from God, separation from the divine. So that in a way we are all sinful because by being human beings we're kind of in some way separated from this divine presence, separated from God, and kind of spiritual journey is getting back to that. But it doesn't mean we're bad people, because we're not.
Do you think that there is some role for religion, Christianity or otherwise, in trying to encourage certain types of behavior, moral behavior, if we want to use that term?
I think so. I'm a little bit reluctant because I get nervous when the church starts saying that it has all the answers and that we should do X, Y, and Z. But I think our spiritual journey and religion can help us look at issues and make decisions, can teach us good ethics, and in that way influence our behavior. I mean, basically what Jesus teaches in the New Testament, that it all comes down to love God and love your neighbor. And that's kind of the underlying ethic for everything. And I think that can certainly help us be better people if we try to live by that ethic.
So you mentioned the idea of original sin. We're all born sinners.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus' death also is supposed to mean the forgiveness of sins. Should we think of it that way?
Well, yeah, we start to get an atonement theology and why did Jesus die? And for a lot of people, again, the traditions, substitutionary atonement, Jesus died in our place. Doesn't make a lot of sense. Some authors have called that basically God as a child abuser because he's, you know, sending his child to death. Mm. But I think, for me, I think resurrection is important, and Jesus' death means something. But for me, it's not necessarily about substituting for us. It's about showing us a path to relationship with God, not only through death and resurrection, but through all of his teachings as well, which are sometimes overlooked. Sometimes Christianity makes death and resurrection everything and forgets, you know, all the teachings that Jesus gave us as well. So yeah, I mean, that's we could probably talk a whole half hour or more about atonement. For me, Jesus's death, like I said, is not so much about substitutionary atonement as it is Jesus challenged the government of that day. And when you challenge the Roman Empire, that's what happened. they killed you. And so it was a tragedy. And that's it. I mean, but it's showing us a way to live and be in the world, to challenge the problems in our world and to challenge the oppressive powers of our world with the promise of resurrection, that in the end, God's love is going to win.
And one of the questions you kind of wrestle with in here is whether or not the death of Jesus is something that Christians should actually revere or whether they should treat it as something that was tragic.
I don't think we should necessarily glorify the Jesus' death. For me, it was kind of a tragedy. I think God could have used Jesus to show us the path, to reveal more about God to us without necessarily Jesus having to die in that way. But like I say, when you challenge the Roman Empire, that was the result. And yeah, so I don't think it's anything necessarily to glorify. I think, if anything, the resurrection is more meaningful to me. This idea that out of death can come more life, whether it be Jesus, whether it be in our own lives, just this idea of resurrection. Whenever we have problems that seem like our life is over, our world is over, this whole principle or idea of resurrection promises that it's not over, that life can grow out of whatever we're going through.
On the subject of sin, is confession a useful tool for us to address whatever sins we may have committed or think we have committed?
I think confession is useful, but not if it's used to make people feel guilty or shameful. For me, that's not what confession is about. Confession is about naming the obstacles in my life, whether it's something I'm doing or something that's an obstacle that's maybe not even necessarily my fault, but it's something that's keeping me from my relationship with God. And so confession allows me to name that, to put it out there, so that I can be aware of it, so that God in my life can be aware of it and hopefully get by it.
What role does freedom play in all of this? We have this idea that we've been put on the earth by God. Certain things are sort of set in motion. What role is our own freedom playing in sin and our attempts to perhaps address it, forgive it?
Well, I think that's freedom for me is that's what makes us human. I mean, God has created us as loving beings. And in so doing so, we somehow, in some way, become separated from the divine. And our spiritual journey, I understand, is getting back to that relationship, getting back in union with the divine. But our freedom is to not do that if we so choose. And, you know, if in the course of our life we decide that money means more to us, we have the freedom to pursue greed instead of God. That makes us human. We have that freedom to choose.
What is required of us when it comes to forgiveness? I mean, there's the forgiveness of sin, but there's also the idea of forgiving people who have done us wrong. What's required of us if we're going to subscribe to the Christian faith when it comes to forgiving?
Again, I want to say for me, because I don't necessarily speak for all the Christian faith.
Sure. I think all of this, we're talking about you and your book.
right.
I'm asking your opinion, sure.
Right. For me, forgiveness can be really hard. When we need to forgive somebody, it's about letting go. It's about letting go of that hurt. And so it doesn't, because if we're filled with anger or guilt over something, that can gnaw at us and really keep us from living a full life. And so forgiveness is about letting go of the shame and the guilt and the anger that we might hold over things. But that can be really hard to do. It can take time. I think forgiveness is not so much something we say and then it's done. I think forgiveness is a process. You know, Jesus tells Peter that you have to forgive 70 times seven times, which means you got to practice. You got to keep you keep forgiving until basically ever. You just got to keep going and working at it. Yeah, forgiveness is a process, and it's a critical process for us. Not only forgiving others, forgiving ourselves. Sometimes we can say even forgiving God, especially if you have a concept of God where God is in control of everything. You may need to challenge that concept, and you may need to forgive God, or I don't know if forgive God is the right word, but you may need to let go of that concept that says God is doing this to you. I look at it as God is not bringing my problems upon me, but God is helping me through my problems.
Chapter 7 is called Realizing the Kingdom, Thoughts on End Times. And now you make a very particular point here of using the term kingdom and not kingdom. Make the distinction for us.
Right. Language is important, and a lot of our language uses this patriarchal and hierarchical concept of God, and that's true in kingdom. King is both hierarchical and patriarchal, and that's not how I understand God in my life, and so I choose to use the word kingdom instead, which basically when written just drops the G, but it says so much more because it puts the emphasis on this word kin, makes it more of a family, I guess, more caring, more empathy, more compassion, rather than just a God telling you what to do. And you can also make the point that we don't live in kingdoms anymore. They did when the Bible was written, but we don't anymore. So how meaningful is that term really to us? And so to challenge that term and use kingdom instead, I think for me makes a lot of sense because it does, like I say, put the emphasis more on kin and being a family where we're all caring for each other, we're all worried about each other and showing each other compassion, which is, I think is what God is trying to lead us to.
Do you believe that hell exists?
No, not really. I don't see much evidence for the existence of hell other than as a mechanism of the church in some ways to scare people to come to church.
Do you think there's a heaven?
I don't try to make a lot of claims about what happens after we die. So I would say for me there is a heaven, but I wouldn't be able to tell you what it's like. I think of more of it as when we go from this life that we return to the divine. How that happens, what form that happens, we can speculate, but you know, I can't really say. I don't claim to have that answer.
Well, no one really has all the answers, do they?
Right.
I mean, it's all based on what we believe in and what our faith is, right?
Right. Definitely, yeah. So I see it just as creatures of love, which is what I believe humans were created as, that we return to this loving divine presence. And I know for me, that's enough. I think I find that idea wonderfully comforting.
In chapter 8, which is the final chapter of your book, you say, if worship only affects us for an hour on Sunday, it's useless. How should it affect us then?
Well, I've heard it said that really worship is practice for how we live in the world. It's kind of like we go to the gym to build muscles, to be strong physically. I think church at its best, going to worship once a week or more often or however often we do it, is really practice. It's going to a spiritual gym so that we can be spiritually healthy in the world. Another way to think of it is that church is kind of where we practice to build the kingdom, where we practice to go live as God intends us to live, people of compassion and caring. And we practice that together as people that are trying to follow Christ and trying to follow God. And then hopefully we take that out into the world and live in all aspects of our life that way.
You describe prayer as both talking and listening. How do we listen when we pray?
Listening to God or listening for God, for the Spirit, I think can take different forms. It can just be sitting in silence, maybe putting your intentions out there first, and then just sitting in the silence and see where your mind takes you, what comes as you just try to sit there and be empty. But I think it can be more than that, too. I think in some aspect, living our lives and everything we do is prayer, because everything we do is communicating with God. And so I think listening as prayer can also come in reading a book or being in nature or hearing something from a colleague or a family member say something to you that you might think, oh yeah, you know, maybe God's trying to tell me something through that.
Have you had much reaction so far, feedback to your book?
It just came out in August, so just starting to go around and talk to people about it. The reaction I've got has been pretty good so far. I think people seem to be enjoying it and getting something out of it. So that's really my hope, is that it blesses people and just encourages people to think in new ways and to give them permission to think in new ways, to not necessarily feel that they have to stick to what they were taught as kids or to what they might see Christianity in the media be, but to explore other possibilities.
When you say get permission, do you think that there are people who are afraid to say things out loud about religion for whatever reason, that there's just a whole idea of sacredness and whatever that maybe you don't want to tread upon by raising objections or just even questioning?
I think that's true. I think it's difficult in some churches to question. I think it's sometimes difficult in our culture to question, especially if you live in a more conservative area. But I think sometimes, too, those who've been harmed by bad theology have to just give themselves permission, even in the space of their own heart, to challenge what they were taught. I think the things that we are taught as kids, for example, we carry with us the rest of our lives. And so if you're taught that God is this old white guy in a beard up in heaven, it's really hard sometimes to let that go. If you're taught that God is a judging God, it's really hard to let that go. But if you've been harmed by some of that theology, you really have to try to let that go, to give yourself permission to let that go, so that you can build something new, so that you can explore your spirituality in ways that might be more meaningful to you in your current adult life.
Are many of the people who attend Phoenix Community Church people you would describe as having been harmed by theology at some point in their lives?
I think quite a few people have had that experience. I mean, Phoenix was created 30 years ago as the first welcoming church in Kalamazoo for welcoming gay and lesbian people. And I think that is a common experience among gay and lesbian folks, is feeling harmed because they grew up in churches that told them that they were bad and evil because of who they felt they were at the core of their being, just because of who they loved. And so I think a lot of people have had that experience of having to try to let go of that bad theology and find something new, find a more meaningful path. I think it's great. I mean, a lot of people are able to do that. Some people struggle all their lives and are never able to do the letting go part, and so really never find that.
Is it tough for many gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people to kind of work their way back to religion because of just many of the things that are associated with it? As you said, maybe some of the theology, the idea that for a long time, of course, you know, gay marriage was illegal. That has changed in the last few years. But you know, marriage and church were kind of joined together. The idea of then having a family and bringing them to church again. Now there's more adoption and things like that by gay couples. But again, traditionally, this was sort of the province of heterosexuals, families, those sort of things. And is that made it tough for maybe some gay people to try to see their way clear to being part of an organized religion or a church?
Oh, I think that's a common, you know, common experience. Like I say, I know a lot of people who have been able to come back to church and heal from the ways they felt they were harmed and follow a Christian path. And there's others who have chosen to reject the Christian path. Because I think the picture that they have is still this fundamentalist Christianity that wants to reject them. And so their answer is, if the church is going to reject me, then I'll reject the church. My book is intended to speak partly to those people in that you don't have to, I've heard the phrase, you don't have to throw the baby Jesus out with the bathwater. I mean, you can still follow, be a follower of Christ without all of that baggage that you have. But you have to go through that journey to let go of that baggage. Or, you know, I've known people that have followed non-Christian paths as well, where they still want to explore their spirituality And I think that's wonderful. I think for me, just that we're, as human beings, exploring and paying attention to and trying to have a healthy spirituality is more important than just what particular path.
Ken Arthur is pastor at the Phoenix Community Church in Kalamazoo. He is also the author of Out of the Ashes, Constructive Theology for Those Burned Out on Christianity. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
You can find links with more information on Ken Arthur's book at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.